Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. Hoo-ah, I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. One of the Americans I admire most is Frederick Douglass. And my favorite quote of his is, "Righteousness exalteth a nation, sin is a reproach to any people." This constitutes my politics, the negative and the positive of my politics, and the whole of my politics. End quote. Our nation really needs to adopt this approach, and soon. Okay, joining me at the 50 caliber microphone today is Marine vet Skip Coriel. What you been doing, Skip?
Oh, Colonel, I've been, well, it's summertime, you know, harvesting food, canning food. Today, I'm going to be making breakfast sausage out of some venison I have left over from last year. So the kids are excited about that. I made a test sample and it tastes pretty good. So where's the beef? Well, it's not beef, it's venison, but it's in my freezer and it tastes good, Colonel.
Hey, that makes sense to me. Here's what we have for you today. On News and Comments by the Colonel, I'm going to review the disaster of our abandonment of Afghanistan. Then Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby will share his warrant wisdom. The Army Tech Bill Mersch will then discuss leadership and our Army's enlistment problem. Then we'll talk service to school. Yeah, it's about education after military service. And Nick Caterano will discuss the many ways the COVID shots have been hurting many people, including military folks. Finally, Diane Raver will present the movie of the month.
Hey, troops, please invite your friends to join us at this time on this great radio station. Then head on out to frontlinesoffreedom.com and sign up for our free e-newsletter. And join the conversation at facebook.com/frontlinesoffreedom.
We really welcome your input to this show. Send us your ideas and comments through our website, frontlinesoffreedom.com, or by Facebook. And now it's time for news and comments by the Colonel on Frontlines of Freedom. Of course, we'll start with the news. Before handing things over to Skip, here's the lead story I'd like to share. Wagner Group Chief Yevgeny Prigozhin was on a plane that crashed northwest of Moscow Wednesday. Everyone on the plane died. A Telegram channel linked to Wagner, Gray Zone, claimed the plane was shot down by Russian air defense systems. Quote, before the plane crashed, local residents listened to two bursts of characteristics air defense, and this was confirmed by contrails in the sky in one of the videos, as well as the words of direct eyewitnesses, the channel claimed. A video showed the plane falling with only one wing, so it was either shot down or there was an internal explosion. The demonstrative elimination of Prigozhin and the Wagner Group command 2 months after the coup attempt is a signal from Putin to Russia's elites ahead of the 2024 elections. Mykhailo Prodolyak wrote on X, formerly known as Twitter, Moscow had used the Wagner Group since 2014 to expand Russia's military presence in Africa and the Mideast. Earlier this summer, Mr. Prigozhin spent weeks criticizing Russia's performance in Ukraine, claiming a lack of support. That's when he called for a military uprising against the Kremlin in June to oust Russia's defense minister, and he led his forces from eastern Ukraine towards Moscow. Then a deal brokered by Belarusian President Lukashenko ended the rebellion in exchange for an amnesty for Prigozhin and his fighters. At the time, Mr. Putin branded Mr. Prigozhin a traitor as the revolt took place and said he would punish the group and Prigozhin harshly. Later, a criminal case against Prigozhin was dropped. Quote, the Russian Ministry of Defense and the Kremlin have been destroying the Wagner private company and weakening Prigozhin's authority since the rebellion, and the assassination of Wagner's top leadership was likely the final step to eliminate Wagner as an independent organization, said a report. Now for the rest of the news. Take it away, Skip.
Well, Colonel, according to the FBI, more individuals with links to terrorism crossed our southern border in April of this year than the total number of terrorists caught in the 4 years Trump was in office, 2017 through 2020, combined.
And our government is telling us that all is well on the border? Everything's under control? Clearly it's not, as any border control officer you want to talk to can tell you. This is going to blow up and hurt all of us.
And we are told that climate is a major issue for our military. John Kerry is President Biden's special envoy for climate. Here's the quote from Judicial Watch President Tom Fitton. It is incredible that it took a Judicial Watch federal lawsuit to find out that Kerry's bloated climate office astonishingly employs at least 45 people, and that we still have no idea what Kerry or his staff actually do under the law.
There is so much real science that shows that climate issues, including climate change, are non-issues. One wonders why our nation has the focus here. And a climate office that has 45 people and does nothing? I think I found a way to cut the budget.
And Texas A&M University has received nearly $500 million in gifts and contracts from the Cutter Foundation. Indeed, Texas A&M, a public university, has established a degree-conferring campus in Cutter without the Texas legislature's permission or involvement. Cutter, if you didn't know, has aligned itself with Islamic terrorists and extremists, which has placed it at odds with us, as well as Israel and our other allies in the Middle East.
The second half of my first tour in Vietnam, I was aide to a general who was a Texas A&M grad, and he was proud of his school. I was shocked to hear that A&M had linked itself with a terrorist nation, a nation that is linked to other terrorists who want to attack and kill us. This is really bad.
And the Biden administration pushed through plans to distribute hundreds of millions of dollars in taxpayer aid to the Palestinians, despite internal assessments that those plans could boost the Iran-backed terrorist group Hamas, according to internal documents obtained by the Washington Free Beacon. State Department officials in 2021 outlined the concerns in private communications, asking the Treasury Department to exempt them from laws that bar our government from injecting taxpayer aid into territories controlled by Palestinian terror groups. The Biden administration needed this authorization in order to move forward with its plans to unfreeze over $360 million for the Palestinian Authority that were cut off during the Trump administration due to the authorities' support for terrorists. Quote, "We assess there is a high risk Hamas could potentially derive indirect, unintentional benefit from our assistance to Gaza. There is less, but still some risk our assistance would benefit other designated groups," the State Department wrote in a draft sanctions exemption request circulated internally in March 2021, shortly after Biden took office. Quote, "Notwithstanding this risk, state believes it is our national security interest to provide assistance in the West Bank and Gaza to support the foreign policy objectives," unquote.
Gee, it seems that supporting terrorists is the in thing to do now. Everybody's doing it. Troops, this is insane. There's no way of knowing how many lives will be lost because of this insanity.
And our U.S. Space Force has activated a unit that targets other nations' satellites and the ground stations that support them. It's the first and only unit with that mission. The unit will be based at Colorado's Peterson Space Force Base and already has its own patch, a Grim Reaper with a delta shape for a nose. The mission also includes counter defense to protect our satellites. The unit will be armed with a mix of ground-based lasers, signal jamming devices, and cyber attack tools.
This makes real sense to me. Good move, Space Force.
And the recent removal of the top two commanders overseeing China's nuclear arsenal reveals serious fractures in Chinese leader Xi Jinping's regime and will harm its military modernization. The commander of the PLA Rocket Force and its political commissar, the second in command, were purged from their posts after having disappeared from public view for months. The reasons for their dismissal and their whereabouts are unknown.
As strong as China and its military appear, they have a number of serious problems. This is one I had no clue about, but I'm not surprised.
And on August 8th, the governor of Massachusetts declared an emergency over the influx of immigrants, a number of whom are in the country illegally. Governor Maura Healey said the state's shelter system is nearing a breaking point due to rapidly rising numbers of immigrants, even after the creation of new emergency sites at Joint Base Cape Cod to try to handle the increase.
Oh my goodness, who would have ever expected such a thing to happen? This must be a big surprise to the leaders of our nation. Hey, clearly this is no surprise, therefore it's intentional. And the illegals are still pouring into our nation by the thousands every day. And our federal government is promoting it. And they're being housed at a military base. Boy, that's really good for our nation's defense. Not. What a horrible disaster for our nation.
And the Philippines has denied making any promise with China to remove a World War II-era warship, which Manila uses as a military outpost to assert its sovereignty from a disputed shoal in the South China Sea. Tensions have soared between the two neighbors after the Philippines accused the China Coast Guard of making dangerous maneuvers and firing water cannons against its boat that was delivering supplies to troop stations on BRP Sierra Madre in the Second Thomas Shoal, which Manila calls Hangjun Shoal.
Well, the Philippines are only doing what China is doing in claiming waters to be a part of their nation. I guess we'll have to see what happens next.
And Chinese Defense Minister Li Shangfu recently visited Belarus and said his country would increase military cooperation with Russia's neighbor and ally, where Moscow is deploying tactical nuclear weapons. Shangfu met with strongman President Alexander Lukashenko in Minsk and said, "The purpose of my visit to Belarus is precisely the implementation of important agreements at the level of heads of state and the further strengthening of bilateral military cooperation." Neither side gave details of what the cooperation will entail, but the two countries have agreed to hold joint military exercises next year. Li visited Russia just before going to Belarus.
The world continues to get more dangerous. I sure hope we can get someone with some common sense into our Pentagon soon. And that's the news. As Americans, it's our responsibility to ensure that our nation is well-run and on the right path. Politics and politicians are confusing. We can work together. Concerned Veterans for America can assist you, even if you're not a vet, in getting involved and getting our nation back on track. Working with them is one of the things I do. Check CV4A.org. That's CV4A.org. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Coming up, I'll share comments by the Colonel, and then we'll enjoy some warrant wisdom. Then we'll talk leadership with Bill Mersch. At ease, troops, take a break.
Military leaders have called our national debt the greatest threat facing America, and for good reason. We're more than $32 trillion in debt and counting.
Meanwhile, Congress continues to throw money at the Pentagon and Veterans Affairs with no idea if the money is reaching its intended targets.
Concerned Veterans for America fights for more responsible spending from Washington so Americans remain safe and prosperous in the future.
Visit cvafrontlines.com to learn more and join the movement. That's cvafrontlines.com.
This is Marine Vet Skip Coria with your Home Defense Tip of the Week. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, your front door is the number one preferred entry point for home invaders. On average, it takes 5 seconds to break down your solid steel security door. To prevent this, reinforce your door frame by doubling the 2x4s and by using longer, case-hardened screws to attach the hinges to the door frame. This is just one more way to keep your family safe. For more useful tips on home and personal defense, visit homedefenseshow.com.
This is Colonel Danny Gillum. It is 20 minutes after the hour, and you are in formation and listening to the front lines of freedom all across America. Now it's time for comments by the Colonel. In July 2021, President Biden informed the nation of the coming drawdown of U.S. forces from Afghanistan after a 20-year occupation. The evacuation would be, quote, secure and orderly, he said, with little chance of Taliban takeover. Quote, the likelihood that there's going to be a Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely, he said. Little more than a month later, Biden had been proven wrong on all counts. The Taliban took over Afghanistan, entering the capital city of Kabul with no resistance after a two-week-long blitz during which multiple provincial capitals fell into their hands. President Ghani fled the country, abandoning his palace to the black-turbaned militants who roamed freely in his offices by day's end. Our diplomats rushed to destroy sensitive documents and equipment at the spiraling U.S. embassy. Our armed forces completed their withdrawal from Afghanistan on 30 August 2021, ending the 20-year war. This pullout turned to be the biggest military disaster in the history of our nation, as we turned over to the terrorist Taliban not only many American citizens and Afghan people who had helped us and whom we promised safety, but also billions of dollars of modern high-tech military equipment. Our military fled the area, leaving all of the valuable people and things behind. Here's the background. The Trump administration realized that the war in Afghanistan was an endless war with no victory possible. Afghanistan is not a country, merely an area full of tribes who don't like each other. Their government and military was dysfunctional. In February 2020, the Trump administration and the Taliban, without the participation of the Afghan government, signed the U.S.-Taliban deal, which stipulated that fighting restrictions on both sides and provided for the withdrawal of all NATO forces from Afghanistan in return for the Taliban's counterterrorism commitment. The Trump administration's U.S.-Taliban deal, and then the Biden administration's decision in April 2021 to pull out all U.S. troops by September 2021 without leaving a residual force, as was initially intended, were the two critical events that caused the begin of the collapse of the Afghan forces. It was clear to almost everyone that the Afghan military was inept. After 20 years of training and support, they couldn't defend themselves. Our support was going nowhere. Following the deal, we dramatically reduced our number of air attacks supporting Afghanistan's leading to the Taliban takeover of Kabul on the 15th of August, 2021. As a part of the deal, the Trump administration agreed to an initial reduction of U.S. forces from 13,000 to 8,600 troops by July 2020, followed by a complete withdrawal by 1 May 2021 if the Taliban kept its commitments. At the start of Biden's administration, there were 2,500 U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan, and in April 2021, Biden said we should complete withdrawal by the 11th of September. The Taliban began a final offensive on the 1st of May, and on the 8th of July, Biden stated a new completion date of 31 August. There were about 650 U.S. troops in Afghanistan in early August 2021, tasked with protecting Hamad Karzai International Airport and the U.S. Embassy in Kabul. The intelligence assessments estimated that Kabul would fall following the withdrawal of all our forces, and the security situation deteriorated rapidly. We also launched Operation Allies Refuge to airlift our translators and selected Afghan citizens considered at risk or reprisals. U.S. Forces Afghanistan Forward was established as a successor command to oversee the evacuation of all U.S. diplomatic, security, advisory, and counterterrorism personnel remaining in the country after the withdrawal of our troops. On 12 August, following continued Taliban victories across Afghanistan, Biden announced that 3,000 U.S. troops would be deployed to Kabul airport to evacuate U.S. embassy personnel, U.S. nationals, and special immigrant visa applicants. With the rapid advance of the Taliban in the provinces, on 14th of August, the U.S. increased its troop commitment to 5,000, and another 2,000 troops were deployed to bring the total number to 7,000. The last U.S. military planes left Kabul airport at 11:59 p.m., on the 30th of August, 2021, 2 years ago, this coming Wednesday. Following our withdrawal, about 1,000 U.S. citizens and Afghans holding visas were held up by the Taliban. On the 28th and 29th of September, Defense Secretary Austin, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff General Milley, and U.S. Central Command Commander General McKenzie were among the numerous Defense Department officials who denied during congressional testimonies President Biden's previous claim that his decision to withdraw troops from Afghanistan was because of advice from senior U.S. military leaders, and stated that they had in fact advised him to keep some troops in Afghanistan. Well, it's worthy of note that none of these senior leaders or any other senior military people refused to implement this criminally stupid abandonment of people and things. Nope, they were just obeying orders, the same use the German Gestapo gave as an excuse for murdering the Jews during World War II. Given the magnitude of this abandoning of people and equipment and state-of-the-art classified stuff, isn't it strange that no senior officer was pressed by his standards of integrity to stand up and say, "No, sir"? Yes, that person would likely be fired or even charged with a violation of an order, but isn't that what courage and integrity are about? For a few months thereafter, many groups and organizations worked to sneak our citizens and Afghan allies and their families out of the country, and many were successful. President Biden told CBS in February, quote, "Do I bear responsibility? Zero responsibility," when he was asked about the possibility that women would lose their rights under the new Taliban rule. Quote, "The responsibility I have is to protect America's national self-interest and not put our women and men in harm's way to try to solve every single problem in the world by the use of force." And of course, he blamed everything on Trump. This is now a part not just of our nation's heritage, it's a part of our future, because the leaders who let this happen are also in power and have received no chastisement, nor have they expressed any remorse for the decisions and actions. Friends and fellow citizens, it's our responsibility to keep our government under control. Please communicate regularly with your elected officials, get politically active, and vote, and encourage others who can do so legally to vote too. This is our country. We're responsible. And those are my comments for today. This is Colonel Denny Gillum. You're listening to Frontlines of Freedom. Now we get to enjoy some warrant wisdom with Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. What do you have this week, Roland?
Last week, we talked about the impact that F-16s may have on the war in Ukraine. Well, it came out this week that the U.S. is now willing to train Ukrainian pilots and maintainers on F-16s at Morris Air National Guard Base in Arizona. This will be the most direct American involvement so far in the international effort to equip and train Ukraine with fighter aircraft. In addition, Ukrainian pilots will also receive necessary English language training at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas. So, although this is not completely ironed out, it looks like there will be several pilots and dozens of maintainers trained. But so far, there's no specific timeline on how long this training is going to take. There's also no news if whether the U.S. is going to provide munitions for those F-16s. Recently, President Biden gave the necessary official approvals for countries such as Denmark and the Netherlands to start training Ukrainian pilots on the F-16s. The U.S. has also said it will fast-track any requests from those countries to transfer their older F-16s to Ukraine, especially aircraft that are being traded out for the newer F-35s. This is all great news, but we need to remember that F-16s are American-made, so the U.S. is also going to need to help train Ukraine in how to operate these aircraft. The 162nd Wing has trained pilots from 25 countries to fly the F-16, but there's way more to learn than just basic flying skills of the F-16. Especially with Ukrainian pilots, who've been flying Soviet-era aircraft that use completely different tactics than Western aircraft. Things like air combat maneuvers, tactical intercepts, close air support, and suppression of enemy air defenses are all areas that the U.S. is going to need to teach them. For Frontlines of Freedom, I'm Chief Warrant Officer Roland Ashby. Back to you, Colonel.
Thanks, Roland. I always appreciate your comments. Straight ahead of Frontlines of Freedom, we'll discuss leadership with Army vet Bill Mersch. Then we'll talk service to school. All this is coming up. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. You're standing tall with Frontlines of Freedom. I'll be right back. Troops, it's time for some boxing. Box three rounds, take a break, box another three, then stand at ease.
HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with all of your everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, health-related services, or information on retirement planning, financial resources, or more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all of your daily needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net wants to thank you for your service, and may God continue to bless the U.S. of A.
Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. Troops, welcome back to our nation's largest military veteran talk radio show, Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, please do send me your comments and questions. Email me through frontlinesoffreedom.com. So it's an honor to welcome Army vet Bill Mersch. Bill Merrick is a leadership expert and a personal development author who offers insights on possible reasons behind the lower than average attrition rates. Bill has also extensive experience as a corporate leader. Further, he hopes to find solutions to raise recruitment rates for our military. And he's written a book on this. It's called So You Want to Be a Leader, Secrets of Lifetime of Success. So leadership is something we can talk about. Thanks for joining us today, Bill.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Bill, start by telling us about your time in the Army. When and why did you join? What'd you do?
Oh, well, I was in between 1969 and 1972. So it's a little bit of an interesting story. The draft was in play during the Vietnam War, and I was in college, and I just was finishing up a master's degree when I got my draft notice, and I was going to school in Atlanta. My hometown was in a small town 250 miles to the south, so rather than go to be inducted there, the day before, I went to the induction center in Atlanta and joined. And I also expressed my desire to be an officer, and so the program that I was in was one where I went through basic training, then advanced individual training, and then Army OCS at Fort Belvoir. All of that training was combat engineer training, but when my class in OCS was ready to graduate, we were told that there was not a need for new second lieutenants in the engineer corps in Vietnam. So they asked, what other thing would you like to do? And I thought, well, artillery or something like that's not going to help me much in civilian life later. So I chose, and I wanted to be in business after the military, so I chose a quartermaster corps. So they sent me to Fort Lee, Virginia, to learn a little bit about logistics, and then to Fort Benjamin Harrison to a finance school there. And then they sent me to, the Army sent me to Germany for 2 years as a platoon leader there. And that was really a very good experience. I really enjoyed the whole thing. Military was good for me.
Oh, good. What did you do when you got out? Obviously, you were, got into corporate America and education.
Well, I was, like I said, I was interested first just in some type of business. So I went through, I was in, located in Virginia at the time, and went through a few job interviews. Didn't get too excited about much, but there was a opportunity. Some relatives I had told me at then Madison College, which is now James Madison University, and they told me it was for the business manager's position. So I went. I hadn't seen the ad, so I went to the business manager's office on campus and announced to the executive assistant to the vice president that I was there for the business manager's job. They didn't call him a vice president then. It was called business manager. She laughed hilariously. She just, it cracked her up because her boss wasn't looking for another job, but she understood that I'd misunderstood what the job opening was. But she found that I'd just mustered out of the military. And she said, you know, my boss is a retired colonel. He may just want to talk to you just a little bit about your military experience. So that was the opening. I went in, we talked. A lot of things happened, but at any rate, he offered me an opportunity to interview for a job that was open, an auxiliary enterprise director, which at the time I had no clue what that meant. But I learned, and I think he saw, must have seen some leadership ability at the time in me, and he called me back, had me do go through the interviews, that sort of thing, and he ended up hiring me for some, not the auxiliary job, but during the course of the interviews, I found that he had just inherited the housing operation and did not know what to do with it. And so I volunteered to take on the job of housing director for him. And he liked that. He hired me for that. And so that's how I got started. And then I progressed up through the ranks in his division, director of finance and some other things. And then when he retired, they did a national search and chose me to be his successor. As at that time, they changed the title to vice president from business manager. So, and I really enjoyed that work. So after 14 years at James Madison, I went to the College of William and Mary. I served there for 10 years in a similar role, and then 22 years at the University of Central Florida, all in the business administration side of things. And I really liked that. Enjoyed it.
Well, that makes sense. And I've got a little bit of the same experience, not quite like yours. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking leadership with Bill Murph. We're talking about leaders. There's all kinds of leadership styles and all kinds of good leaders. And there's not a one-size-fit-all thing, but there is a difference, I think, between somebody who is a leader, knows how to be a leader, and someone who is occupying a leadership position.
That's absolutely true. I agree with that.
Talk about that a little bit, will you, Bill?
Well, if you're in a leadership position and you're not really a leader, usually a person doesn't last long in that sort of role. And while they're in that role, they can do some serious damage. So it's not a good thing. One of the things that I say, too, is I don't think there's any such thing as the perfect leader, but there are leaders that are perfect for given situations.
Yeah, that certainly makes sense. And
each organization is at a different place in what they need. Sometimes they need this type of a leader. Other times they need another type of a leader. And so if they choose wisely, they pick a leader that matches up with what their needs are, and then they're successful.
And regardless of what your style of leadership is, you're looking to help people be all they can be and be their best, and so that they can do well, feel good, and you can encourage them, even if you've got to modify a few things to make what they do fit what you need done.
Absolutely. I think a big part of a leader's job is being a mentor and helping other people succeed in their career path. And part of your job is to figure out, I think, what they're good at, what they're not so good at, and try to match up them with parts of the job where they will be successful.
There's nothing more satisfying for me as a leader than to go to somebody and tell them what a good job they're doing and how much I appreciate them. And they know I'm not just saying it to be nice. They know they did do the job well.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. It's important to recognize people publicly.
And also personally and privately. But again, only if they actually did do it, not just, I want you to feel good.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. When I was in high school, I played tennis a lot. And there was one kid that was a little bit older than me. And every time he hit the ball, he would go, "Good job. Good shot." And I mean, it's like, no, it wasn't. It was a horrible shot. It was my first lesson. And let's not overdo this good job stuff when it was not a good job.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, just your ego, your ego understands.
Yeah, then when you do something really good and that same person says great job, it's like, how do you know? You're telling me good job on the bad stuff.
Yeah, that's right. You're just complimenting for breathing. You're not saying anything right. Useful. And, right. And that's not challenging you to get better.
No.
You might be wanting to get better, but it works a lot better if your mentor, boss, whoever it is encouraging you, and you can see the improvement and you hear it from him or her.
What you're just talking about, I think, is important too in the military for retention.
Yes, it is. And that's a topic we need to talk about. We're about out of time for this time, but we need to talk about retention in our military. And we'll do that. So there's more to talk about leadership. Bill's going to stay with us. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Yeah, it's push-up time. I want you to do 103 push-ups. That's how many I do, twice a week usually. Then take a break, but stay in the area. Bill and I will be right back.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at patriotfoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off patriotfoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM and shop today.
This is Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this hour on Frontlines of Freedom. We're continuing our conversation with Army vet Bill Merk on leadership. And we just started addressing the Army's recruiting problems. What do you see as some of the key problems here, Bill?
I see several. I'll give the Army this. I think the Army is trying. They recognize they had a shortfall last year. They didn't meet their goals. They were about 25% short of the target, and they're doing some things that to help it be better. For one example, is that Future Soldier Preparatory Course that they put in place at Fort Jackson, South Carolina. This year it's been picked up at Fort Benning, and I believe the Navy is putting in a similar course up at the Great Lakes at their training facility there. And that's helping get some of the potential recruits that didn't meet the minimum criteria, and they're working with them for several weeks to help them prepare. And I think they're over 90% success rate with the people that have gone through that program. So that's one of the things that they're doing well. One of the things that I think they could do a lot better, though, is really tell the story as to why it is so important for the United States to have a strong military. A lot of the conversation is directed to the Gen Z generation, the Generation Z. And that's the young people born between 1997 and 2012, which means that that group right now is between 11 years old and 26 years old. And that falls into the category, the prime age, 18 to 24, that the military is trying to recruit.
Yes, they have to reach them, but there's all kinds of issues. You've already sort of addressed a problem with physical fitness and that sort of thing.
Right.
But my experience is that a significant percentage of people who enlist in the Army come from military families, and those military families aren't being that encouraging anymore.
Exactly. I think it's something in the order of 80-something percent come from military families. And I've heard retired or ex-military folks say, I would not encourage my child to go into the military. And I think I understand where they're coming from. I really do. But I don't agree with them. I think the military has a lot to offer young people. I don't know that the story is being told as well as it should be. And there's so much misinformation out there. I think a recent Army survey asked young people today, do you understand what Army life is like, what you would do in the military? And something like 70% say, oh, yeah, I understand. But then when they start being asked specific questions, they don't know. They really don't know what being in the Army is like. And so that's why I think the military, all branches, really need to do a better job of helping educate young people as to what life in the military really is like. And I said that Gen Z group is, the youngest ones are 11 now. Well, that's about 7 more years before they're eligible, 6 or 7. I think we should start earlier, putting some stories out there so that young people start to understand a little bit more about what the opportunities are before they hit that prime 18 mark and suddenly they're confronted with a choice.
Well, certainly that's a part of the issue. And our school systems are not good at sharing that sort of thing. The parents aren't doing much of a job of sharing that sort of information. And I totally agree with you that military experience at almost any level is useful to a young person as they go on in life, whether they stay in the military or most of them won't go into civilian life, just as it did for you and just as it did for me.
Mm-hmm.
The opposition, I think, is that we have poor leadership. And do I really want to join a unit that whose whole focus is on critical race theory and proper pronouns and not being combat ready? And that is, to me, the major challenge, though maybe I'm biased.
Yeah, I think you're a little bit biased in the first two things that you said. I don't, critical race theory and all that, I mean, and maybe they talk about it some, but I don't think most young people even understand what that means or care. The last thing, though, you said about physical fitness, that is important. I think that is truly important. But a lot's been said recently about the doing away with the old Army physical fitness test and going to the new Army combat fitness test. The old test involved basically three things, push-ups, sit-ups, and running. And the new one has about 10 different activities. And I actually watched a film recently that was showing people go through the new one. It didn't look all that easy to me. I'm not sure some of the politicians that say it's soft could pass it. It's
good point.
So anyway, I think some of that's gotten overblown, but being fit is really important. It really is.
Being fit is incredibly important. We can't function without that.
No. But here's another thing to consider, though. There are a lot of jobs in the military, in the Army, that don't require a high level of fitness. Jobs that are going to be done that is highly unlikely or even probable that these people will end up in combat situations. And there's a lot of really smart young people that are good with computers and electronics and things that we could use that could spend their whole time in the United States in some developmental capacity. They don't need to be that fit. They need to be fit, but not as much as somebody that's going to be frontline infantry, say.
That's a good point. Go ahead.
And so I think we need to start segmenting a little bit in our recruiting as to, well, what are we trying to recruit for? Are we recruiting for combat-ready folks? Or are we recruiting for somebody to help us develop the next generation of drone warfare? And if they've got some real talent that they can provide to that effort, I'd like to have them, even if they are 98 pounds and struggle to run a mile.
Well, good point. The guys who fly the drones remotely. Yeah.
Right. You know, from Tampa.
We just need them to know how to do that well.
Right. The other thing that gets into it is retention. I was talking to a recruiter for one of the major airlines just yesterday. I was on a flight, and he was my seatmate actually going to another place. And we were talking about it's not just recruiting and getting the best people you can get, but it's the effort to retain them, to keep them for several years, 10 maybe, but keep them. And I'm not sure we're doing as quite as much as we could on the retention thing. I mean, we've got a lot of different financial incentives in place, but that's not what I'm talking about. I'll give you my own personal example. Okay. When it was time for my time to be up, I was a first lieutenant. The next thing in line would have been to be promoted to captain. I didn't really understand what would really be involved with me becoming a captain, where I would be stationed, what I would be in charge of, what I would be doing, that sort of thing. And it was very vague about how long the commitment would be if I did opt to stay in. There were so many unanswered questions that I think if some of those questions, if I'd had a mentor, say, that could help me understand what that next step would really mean, I'd probably still be in. I really yeah. would. So using my own example, I'm sure there are others like me that with a little bit of encouragement and a little bit of information and some explanation of what the next step would be and how it would work, I think the retention levels would go up. And that would offset some of the lack of recruiting at the beginning stage.
Well, that makes sense. And obviously, if you fly in a drone, after 2 years, you should have some capability, but you'll be much better after 6 years.
So, yes.
And we need that advanced ability. Well, this is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking leadership with Bill Mersch. Bill, we're running out of time. You have a leadership advice handbook that's based on your true experiences. It's entitled, So You Want to Be a Leader, Secrets of Lifetime Success. And you got another book, too. Talk a little bit about your books for a minute. Tell listeners how they can get copies.
Okay. Well, the easiest way to find out how to get the copies is just to go to my website, which is williamfmerck.com. That's William, F as in Foxtrot, Merck, M-E-R-C-K.com. And how to get both of these books is there, plus excerpts from them and some of the things that I've talked about. But So You Want to Be a Leader, I wrote that just based on my own lifetime of experiences in the working world, starting with high school and going all the way through decades of work, both in the civilian world as well, the military, and then higher ed. And it's almost a how-to, what the kinds of things that a leader faces in their everyday life and the experiences that I had as examples to help make points about how to handle those everyday things that you get into. Breadcrumbs, Finding a Philosophy of Life, that's almost a corollary to the leadership book. And in Breadcrumbs, the big question there is some people that think would say, well, why am I who I am? Why am I this as opposed to that? And examining your important lifetime experiences from the time you were 2, 3, 4, 5 years old, all the way up through your developmental years, will answer a lot of those questions as to why you are who you are. And if you do that examination, I think it helps you understand yourself better, but it also makes it pretty clear that you're who you are because of all of your unique experiences in life. And so when you're talking with someone else who doesn't agree with you or has a different viewpoint, it makes you a little bit more empathetic, if that's the right word, makes me want to understand a little more about, well, why are they seeing the world differently than I do? What kind of lens do they have that shows them a different world than I'm seeing? Did I miss something? Is there something I should know that my experience didn't tell me? And that's the Breadcrumbs book. It goes through a lot of that kind of stuff.
And how can people get copies?
Amazon? You get them Amazon.
Okay. And how can people stay in touch with you if they want to do that?
On my website, there's an email address that they can use. I'd love to get feedback on my books. And again, if they agree or don't agree, I'd love to hear all of that, because I'd like to write some more. And it would help to have the feedback on the first two.
Bill, thank you. Thank you for your excellent comments today. I really enjoyed them, and we need to do this again. And thank you for your service to our nation. I'm proud to call you a friend.
I appreciate you saying that, and I really appreciate what you do with your show. It's very important. Anything that we can do to help the military is a good thing.
Amen, sir. This concludes the first hour of the show. We'll start the second hour discussing service to school with Marine vet Jim Selby. Then Nick Cotterugo will discuss the efforts to get law enforcement to help deal with the COVID lies. Diane Raver will present the movie of the month. And of course, we'll conclude with our weekly mailbag, military history, and our self-defense report. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom Troops. It's time for pull-ups. Do 30 good ones, grab some protein, rehydrate with water. And finally, put a big smile on your proud to be an American face and send me your thoughts by email or on Facebook.